I'm ready to start.
Okay, this is board time on Wednesday, 12 February. Okay, first order of business, Mike Burgess, I guess, wants to update us again on legislative matters. There's one bill in particular I think he's going to talk about. And then there's the
tribal tax.
Then there's the full list. We'll run down it like we did the last time.
Tribal tax. That'll get.
Oh no! It's the other kind of tribal. It's basically giving them a tax break on non-tribal land.
Oh.
Yeah.
We should have seen that one coming.
Oh yeah, and the counties. It's the association we talked about it a lot at legislature. They're fighting hard on it. They need AWB and other kind of business partners to stand up, though, because we're the only ones, like local governments, are the only ones pushing.
Wow.
And they're keeping us revenue neutral to try to shut us out, because they're giving them a leasehold excise tax and fee in lieu.
That's a category.
Hey Mike, Mark McCauley here. We're in board time.
Reservation day.
Yeah, I got.
Just a second. I'm going to throw my headphones in so I can write while we're talking.
Okay.
So.
Okay, I'm good.
Okay, Axel's not here. He's off at a hook rot meeting.
But well, he'll probably cry about one of the things I have to tell you.
I told him the worst.
Is his bill dead again?
What's that?
Is his bill dead again?
Well, yes, it is. The Axel Memorial Bill is not
good. Oh, is that the rural one where we get more sales tax?
Yeah.
Rural economic. We'll talk about it. It's a budget issue. So.
Okay.
Did you go through who's in the room, just so Mike knows?
Okay. We've got Holly Gilbert from our PIO office here, Commissioner Medora, Commissioner Mielke, and Commissioner Stewart, Tyler Graff from the Columbian, and?
Pauline Warren.
A citizen. Pauline Warren?
Okay.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Great.
Would you like me to just start running through this?
Yeah, we've got a list, I guess, that you and Axel put together. It's the agenda, you know, that lists all the bills. And then we have a House bill report on EHB 1287.
And do you have one on, I sent you another one, too, on the housing surcharge bill.
What's the bill number?
It would have been 2368 or 6313.
No, we don't have a report.
6313 is on the bottom. Yeah, it's on there.
It's on the list.
It's listed on the agenda, but we don't have the bill report. Did you send
that to the report?
You sent it to Axel?
Well, why don't I email it to Tina real quick?
To Tina, great.
What's the bill number again, Mike?
6313.
The last two.
Okay. Okay, if you email it to Tina, she'll print it and bring it into us.
Okay, I'm going to do that right here.
Okay.
So just to start where we're at session, we're just over halfway. We have gotten to the part of session where we are working on the on what we refer to as floor action. This is where they're out on the House and Senate floors, moving all the bills that they have voted from the policy committee and the fiscal committees before the policy committee cut off, which was last Friday, and then the fiscal committee cut off, which was yesterday, but the House kind of did their own self-imposed one for Monday.
Yeah, I love this.
So we will be out on the floor through this weekend until Tuesday. Tuesday at 5 o'clock is when bills have to be voted off the House and Senate for the policy bills.
Okay. Hey, Mike. I just noticed that I did have 2368.
Okay. You have the bill report there.
Yeah, and the commissioners have a copy of that, so...
Okay, I want to know that.
All right, thanks.
So, specific to our lead agenda, policy agenda items, the Conservation Futures Levy Bill is still in the Senate Rules Committee. I am working to get that bill pulled from Rules and working with Senator Benton, our prime sponsor, to make sure that bill moves from Rules. Just for quick education, Rules Committee is more of a procedural committee. It's not a standard committee where there's public hearings and the like. It's essentially another step in the process. It's kind of a weed out committee in the process. So that bill is there. We had both the stormwater flexibility charges and bills, and I added another number because 6077 is the same bill as 6116. Out of the same bill language, and 6077 was the vehicle that ended up moving. And that is the bill that would allow you more flexibility with the funds that are collected from the DOT facilities. The other bill, 6117, is the one that would take you from the 85, that would remove the 85%, I guess, the discount, I guess, right. I guess would be a way to describe it, that DOT got. That bill is 6117. It did not move from committee. DOT is opposed to that, and it also has a large fiscal hit to it. The number I had heard was in excess of double-digit millions to the DOT budget, and so clearly that's problematic, but we do have the flexibility bill moving forward. The Industrial Land Bank Bill 1360 is on the House floor calendar, set to be voted on, I would hope, today or tomorrow. There is an amendment on the bar, which you may remember, commissioners, when we met about all our priorities back in December with our delegation, Representative Moeller asked a question of why did Representative Taylor oppose the bill. Well, Representative Taylor has an amendment on the bar that would expand the Industrial Land Bank program to every county, not just the counties that were carved out in the original legislation. That's what I suspected it was. I talked to Representative Taylor yesterday and confirmed that with him. And his point is, he wants every county to get this. I don't think it's likely that amendment hangs. And frankly, it might even be outside the scope and object of the bill. But I am working to hopefully get that bill passed from the floor. It has to pass before next Tuesday. But I'm hoping I can get it right out there tomorrow.
Hey, Mike, is Taylor... if he doesn't get it hung, is he going to get in the way of this getting passed, and cause a stink, or is this him just trying to get some equity for other, for Yakima and his district area?
I think he will probably oppose the bill. He's a legislator that is quite often a no vote. There's a core of legislators in the House Republican Caucus that vote no quite often. And he may well be that, but I don't anticipate him trying to hold this bill up. Representative Harris is actually number two on the bill.
Cool.
And I've been talking with him about how important this is for the county and specifically his district, and he's aware of that. So, Commissioner Stewart, I hate to say this, and then of course it is a stink, but I don't imagine that's going to be what Representative Taylor does.
Thank you.
And then, of course, the last bill is Axel's, the Development Tax Credit Bill. Unfortunately, the pushback we got was similar to what we saw last year with budget implications and how that all fits with, in the global sense, the McCleary decision and things like that. And also, it's a short session. And I was fearful that would be the case. I think that we have talked about that being the case with this bill, but it played its way out. Not pass committee.
But we have vehicles for three of the four that are still alive. That's good.
Yeah, and I guess beyond that, the casualty would be the stormwater, the one that would get the, I guess we can call it the rate equalization. But in talking with Senator Benton, I think we both knew that was going to be an uphill fight because it did have a fiscal hit. And DOT makes a case that they use those funds to do stormwater mitigation on their own. On their projects, and so it's not as simple as they just take the money and go do whatever with it. I think that's a legitimate case that they can make. We may differ in that, but they have a case to make there, and ultimately the flexibility bill, they probably set the table to allow the flexibility one to move forward. Want me to keep going?
When's the last day of the session?
Commissioner McGorry, the last day is March 13th.
After Oregon. Oregon's March 9th. Okay.
I didn't know that. But yeah, we're the 13th.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, you all took a position in favor of a bill with dealing with the child abuse investigations. Mm-hmm. That bill did get a hearing, but it got a hearing on the last day, and there were some complexities to it, to where both the prosecutors... The Prosecutors Association signed in with concerns, and the police and sheriffs were actually opposed to the legislation.
That's weird.
Which caused some issues. And I think that the issues in the bill went broader than maybe Senator Cleveland had intended. And it's something we'll have to look back at, and I will circle back with her, you know, when the time is appropriate next year, or, you know, after session, because the bill's just not going to receive any more consideration this session.
Well, Mike, that bill was the one that would see to it that those abused children could have their examinations paid for them. Isn't that the bill?
Yes, it is, Commissioner Mielke, but from my understanding, it was the bill did more than that, and that was the issue, that it stretched beyond just the simple, I guess what I could call reimbursement, and that's where the issue arose.
We actually thought the financial impact was small in comparison, but...
No, I think you're right, Commissioner Mielke. I do think that the financial impact was small. But like I said, I think that there was some broader policy addressed in that bill beyond just the reimbursement.
Okay.
And that's where the issue arose. That's what caused the opposition to it, and ultimately its failure to move.
Okay.
The next two bills, you took a position in opposition to last week on the vesting issue. House Bill 2245 is still the one in play, and it is in the Rules Committee in the House. I don't have much more to offer other than it is sitting in House Rules. And then there is the eminent domain issue. This was the bill prime sponsored by Senator Benton that Commissioners Nador and Mielke, you submitted a letter in support. And that bill has moved to the Senate Rules Committee, and it also is waiting to be pulled from Rules. So those bills are, well, the eminent domain bill is where it needs to be in the process.
So it's looking promising?
It needs to be pulled from Rules Commission. I have to touch up with Senator Benton this afternoon anyway, and I will ask him about that, and maybe I can reach out to him after hours.
It could get locked into a package and deal.
What do you say?
Mm-hmm.
At least it's not dead.
So it could go either way.
Is it okay if I talk to him and then I get back in touch?
Yep.
Why don't we do that? And then we talked two weeks ago about the 502 implementation. I actually just read the news article this morning about the action you took yesterday. Last week, the Association of Counties took a position on this issue which was a little interesting. They're opposed, of course, to any sort of preemption from the state limiting your ability to ban or allow any activity related to I-502. But they also took kind of a nuanced position where I kind of referred to it as the pay for play, where as a jurisdiction you would have to allow the activity to receive state support in terms of financial support to do adjudication or law enforcement or, you know, some of the human service implications. I'd like a little bit of direction from you all to not necessarily push back on WASAC per se, but offer Clark County a more specific response from Clark County. And one of the ones the case I've been trying to make with folks is that even if you ban and say the city of Vancouver allows it, if there are felonies, those are going to end up in your court system, which is mandated by the state for you to do. So even if you don't allow the activity in the unincorporated area, you still have an impact, you know, on your court system and your jail system. And I don't know that the case is any broader than that. I mean, I think it's that simple of an argument, but I'd love to hear your input on that.
You can throw some public health and community services dollars in that as well. Both of those are regional services that encompass chemical dependency, public health issues associated with with substance abuse. So there are other potential regional implications that we can get you information on as well to help make the case, much like we get a percentage of the sales tax to help cover regional costs associated with activities that occur within cities. This would fit.
Okay, I will add that to the arguments I use.
And Mike, do we actually have bills addressing this, or are they addressing this?
Mr. Milkey, there are several bills, and there'd be too many for me to give all to you and read through all of them. But the basic gist is that the Senate, the House had a bill by Representative Wiley, interestingly, that would have preempts your ability to ban. And then Representative Condotta had a bill that said to get money, you have to allow them. And they merged those two bills together. And that's kind of the way they sit in the House. The Senate committee's bills are a little different, but the arguments surrounding the whole issue are the same. I am still a bit skeptical that anything passes. I was at a meeting, and I think, Commissioner Stewart, you may have been there at lunch at the Legislative Steering Committee a few weeks ago, when a key senator mentioned that there's going to be an apprehension to do anything on the revenue side because they haven't made any money yet.
Yeah.
Not a dollar has come in yet. And given the specter of having to comply with the education, the McCleary education decision next session, I think there's an apprehension by, higher up budget writers and leaders to do anything, to give any of their money away, any of the state money away. But I still want to be making the case to our delegation that they need to think about that as the county, we are the agent of the state, and the mandates for services for us to provide that Commissioner Stewart just walked through. I want to be able to relay those to our delegation.
Does
that answer your question, Commissioner?
Well, I'm kind of puzzled why a representative from the city would try to prevent the county from banning.
It would prevent any government. It would preempt any government from banning. It's not just the county, a city or a county.
Okay.
I don't know what the explanation is. I'm assuming it's respecting the will of the voters. But that's me talking, not Representative Wiley. So.
Okay.
But am I hearing that you're comfortable with me continuing to relay that message to your delegation?
Yeah. Keep in mind the will of the voters. We did not get a majority on I-502.
What was the percentage of 502 in Clark County?
It was close.
It was 49 point something, not quite a majority.
So 49 point something, yes, right?
Correct.
Right.
50% plus one.
And the other half, no. Or the other part, no, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll keep talking because I have been getting some specific questions. Representative Vick in particular wanted to know what we thought, and I shared with him your draft ordinance that was available on your website because he had some questions about it. I just wanted to relay in particular he's been interested in it. You have, on the next subject, Vanessa prepared some remarks on a county position when it comes to the integration of mental health and chemical dependency. Do you have that document?
I am.
Do you?
Yeah. We have it before.
Apparently Vanessa put together
I'm looking at the wrong bill.
Hey, Mike, you said there was an email?
Well, Vanessa emailed it to me. It's a Word document.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was copied on that, but I'll go print it.
Did you do that, Mark? Because I've been getting some questions from legislators on this issue, and Vanessa, I know, talked to you, Commissioner McDorr, about this.
Yeah, she is a sharp gal.
Did Mark just run out of the room?
He's copying.
Can we talk about this? Is this in the interest of time? Can we jump to the housing bill?
Yep.
Yeah, go for it.
So this is the bill that you have the bill report there. I think you have the 2368 bill report, correct?
Yep. Yes.
And this is the bill on a housing charge. If you go to the summary of the bill there on the bill report, I've been asked by some of our legislators where we sit on this bill, if the county has a position. The way it works is just what the bill, or the bill report there explains, that there is this document surcharge that was adopted. Oh, I don't know what year it was adopted. I'm sure it says there on the bill report. But the law was going to sunset, but Commerce put forward a proposal to continue the fee, and the interested parties have come to an agreement to do that. There are some of the private landowners that are in opposition to the bill, but specific to your interest, the county does receive a significant amount of money for homeless or for these housing programs. The documentation I've seen is close to $2 million a year. Does that sound right, commissioners, to you or to Mark maybe?
Mark, just coming back.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
The header on this is 2639, 6312, and 2572.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's got about 10 bullet points.
Yep. I got it. The commissioners now have it.
So, but Mark, we had started talking about this House Bill 2368 that makes the $10 local homeless housing assistance document reporting surcharge permanent.
What I'm looking at, Mike says $40. Did you say 10?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. Yes, 40.
And this currently goes through us, through the county, and then it's distributed to nonprofits and other organizations that work on homelessness issues, right?
Correct. And I know that Axel, for sure, I know, has talked to some of your folks that work in that arena in Clark County about this specific issue. I guess, obviously, Axel's not there, so he can't explain what the conversations were. But like I said, it's a significant amount of money that flows to the county that's generated by this fee that is used for the homeless and housing assistance programs that, like you said, Commissioner Stewart, that you, I would assume you contract with or you grant to these not-for-profit organizations that address the issue.
I'm seeing what you talked about. It drops to $30, and then it drops to $10 in 2017.
And that would be removed if this passes. The dropping. So what's the issue? So what are you looking for, Mike?
Well, I'm looking for some comments and direction. If this is something that we want to support, it is a priority for WASAC. And specifically Abby that does their human service issue area, and wanted to know if we want to be more your industrial land bank bill is passing right now on the House floor as I'm talking to you.
Excellent.
Well, I'm hoping it's passing, so I'll let you know. But anyway, do we want to take a more firm position, or do we want to stay with WASAC on this?
So WASAC is supporting, WASAC, we talked about it for legislation. WASAC is supporting, it's a medium priority, but they are supporting it as it provides funds to local governments to provide funds to, you know, to local nonprofits who are doing the work to help with homelessness issues. So there has been support from the county association on this.
How's our local delegation on this?
Good question.
I think most are supportive. I know that Senator Benton offered an amendment on the Senate bill that took the money that goes to Department of Commerce. Does Department of Commerce get some of this money too? I think about 15% of it. And he hung an amendment in committee that would take 15% of the money, 45% of the money that goes to Commerce, so 45% of the 15%, if you follow me, mm-hmm. and would use that money to give to private entities that offer the low-income housing assistance,
mm-hmm.
and in doing that, it garnered his support in committee.
Oh, okay.
So why was, because I have a note here, and I don't remember why, I have a note that says that WASAC is opposed to the amendment to put money in landlords' hands because there's no flexibility.
Commissioner, it was the first read that the scenario I just walked through with Senator Benton's amendment,
uh-huh.
was on the 85% that flows to you.
Oh, so that's why WASAC could be like, well, that's money that's supposed to go to us.
It was just, dealing with the volume of bills, but we figured it out. We straightened it out.
Got it. So there's no longer a problem with the amendment?
Well, I think there is still a concern because the 15% of funds that flow to commerce, that money still gets driven out to you all, to some of those not-for-profits through grants.
Yeah.
And so you are, in essence, the amendment does dilute that pool, but I also think the argument back would be that the money would, because of the bill is structured, using 45% of those funds to go for private entities that deal with homeless, you could still make the argument that the money is going to homeless entities or homeless housing entities or however you want to describe it.
Debt assuring debt. One of the things I'm looking at, Mike, has some concern, is the requirement for data sharing is quite extensive. Maybe that might explain why we have about 14.5% for administration. There's 2% to the county for the collection of the fees and 12.5% for managing the program. And I could see that I guess it's nice to have the money. I'm concerned with the way it's drawn up.
You're concerned with the administrative split?
Yeah,
the
administrative cost is 14.5%. If you add it up, in reality, it probably should be 6 or 7. And then I'm concerned with the amount of technical recording that we have to do back to the state, apparently.
Well, it's actually, so we get up to 6%, which is the difference between county and state. So we get 60% of the remainder. There's 2% to collect. Then 6% of the money that would go to the county, well, yeah, but then read the rest of that line. So it says that we can have up to 6% for administration, but Commerce has 12.5% for their administration. So why do we get 6% for administration and they get 12.5%?
We're looking at 20.5% total administration.
So, am I hearing, commissioners, that am I deciphering that we support the concept, we support the program, but we have some concerns about the administrative costs?
Yeah, it looks like everybody's dipping their fingers into it to give a little bit to the homeless.
Well, and if it seems like the amendment's going to hang, then if the amendment's coming from commerce, it should come out of the administrative portion. That there should be money coming out of the administrative portion, not the money that would flow directly to grants and things like that, right? It's a way to tweak the amendment to make sure that you're lowering the administrative and overhead costs that are going straight to commerce. I mean, put them at 6% like we're at.
Well, can we do this then? Can we let me dig around more on that and find out the backstory on the administrative costs and those things, and then get back to you, and then maybe we'll readdress this issue then.
And wrap back around with Senator Benton as well, because if he was the maker of the amendment, see if we can get him to help tweak that a little bit.
The program,
Mike. 72-26.
Go find who those 26 people are.
I can have a guess on who they are, but
the program might be.
That's good. So
great work. Thank you.
And that's good news.
That is good news.
It might be a better program if it sunsetted back down to $10, and then all the money went to the homeless. Anyway.
You're grumpy there.
So,
Mark, you have that piece then that the
Vanessa
created?
Yeah, the 9 bullets.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We have it.
Okay.
Commissioners, I've been getting a lot of questions from our delegation about this whole concept of integration between your mental health and chemical dependency programs. I don't think this is news to any of you what you're doing. But what I asked Vanessa for was this communication, this position paper, I guess. that I could share with our delegation to answer, just kind of give what our positions are. I had asked her to kind of prepare, like, kind of what we're doing and what the current legislation that's floating around, and that's 2639, 6312, and 2725, 72, what we're doing and what the work you are doing would be impacted by those bills, and whether or not we have problems with the legislation because it would interfere with what we're doing down south. And so I had asked that she prepare this, that bring it to you today, to have you all look through this and make sure that it is something that you support, or that if we need to make some changes to it, and this I can carry this forward and articulate your position to our delegation.
Mike, let me express my concern. The RSN that we were supposed to save money with is going to end up costing us $500,000 more every year. And then when the last presentation that they gave us on this being added to it, and the carrot of finances coming from the state is something like what they've done in the past to us in our health care. They wave it out there, promise us some money to pay for it, and then they pull it out the following year, and we're stuck with the program. This is the next thing to be like Obamacare on steroids to pick up the slack, because it's going to combine everything eventually into the RSN or conglomerate thereof, of which the county becomes responsible for it. And so if they're going to do some legislation with it, it needs to come with the money, or the program goes away.
Did you get that, Mike?
Yeah, I heard that. So, does, I guess then the piece prepared by Vanessa, is that, do we not, Mr. Murphy, I'm hearing that you may not agree with what she's provided. Am I hearing that wrong?
My fear is that they'll pull the dollars out from underneath us. And if the program goes with state dollars, we can do it. But already we're upside down with $500,000 in the RSN that they want. And there are some people in the drug and alcohol rehab, you know what it was, that they were concerned with losing money too. So I think I don't want to set it up in a fashion that the carrot is I'll give you money to pay for this and then it goes away. So if in the bill it says the program goes away if the state money goes away, that would protect us from being dumped on.
Okay.
So that's in addition to the 9 points here. You're good with the 9 points.
I haven't read all the 9 points.
Have you, David?
Actually, she's presented, and I think I've read all the details here, but everything that Vanessa has presented on this thing, I thought, absolutely, that makes good sense. She's looking out for the county. She's looking out for our community to make sure that we aren't just simply having to pay and somebody else is just simply profiting off the people.
And my take, just when we were up there for legislation, we talked to several legislators. That was one of the things on our agenda that we were supposed to talk with them about, and we did. And the bottom line that Vanessa's got a lot of great detail in the three kind of umbrella points that we raised and that seemed to be consistent throughout the counties, which is flexibility and control.
Need to
be maintained at the local level and the regional level. That we are supportive of, and that most and many are already integrating, and they use the RSNs as models for that, and saying, so give us flexibility and control and give us funds to be able to make sure it works.
Yeah.
And that those are the kind of umbrella points that we at kind of the elected level were raising, but everything I'm reading here, everything looks right that Vanessa said, but she has a ton more detail on this than I do. So, I trust her judgment that she is within the umbrella of those kind of three main points.
Send money.
So, I'm hearing we're comfortable distributing the piece the way it is, or do we want to add a point addressing Commissioner Milkey's concern?
Well, I think that, you address it, but I think we need to address those three kind of main points up front. The three main points of, you know, we support integration, but we're already doing it. So give us flexibility and control to do it in a way that works right for our region on the ground, and make sure that the funding comes with it so that we can actually do the work and get it, and you know, that we can do that work. And start there, and then, you know, and have, you know, kind of these aren't examples, but have kind of illustrative points that are already on this page. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. And, I mean, and maybe Vanessa can, because, I mean, Vanessa can easily put every one of these numbers in one of those categories, I'm sure. So, I mean, she'd probably be the simplest, quickest way of to get that revised.
So, is someone going to talk with her about getting it revised?
I'm getting the evil eye, Mike, so, yeah, I guess it, I guess that's me.
It's just an eye, wow.
Sorry to make work for people, but the sooner we can do this, the better.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
well, it sounds like the House is, you know, I texted back and forth, then talked with Representative Moeller, who was the prime of a substitute that we did not like on integration, but that was a governor's request legislation. He said he was willing to and going to be working with counties and cities basically with the county association primarily to fix this, to get a better bill. On the House, on Senate side, it sounded like Hargrove was very supportive of fixing it on the Senate side if it's not fixed on the House side, and giving us that flexibility and freedom and control and dollars.
I would agree with that characterization. And this is also going to be kind of a end game thing anyway, how it fits together with because it does have fiscal impact and the budget and things like that. So we have time. I just if we can get the changes back as soon as we can, I can get it to the delegation as soon as possible, because they're kind of a cat and five right now, because they are out on the House floor and Senate floor, so I could get to them.
Okay.
It.
Well, this is a simple matter of just moving the bullets around so they go under one of the three categories. I think that's a quick task, and Vanessa will knock it out shortly.
Cool. When Vanessa gave us that presentation.
Sorry, this is kind of going along, but I have, you know, one other bill, Commissioners, this is the bill report you have there on House Bill 1287.
Okay. 1287.
This is a bill that the Association of Counties, again, has taken a line against, and it deals with the taxation of tribal property. And Commissioner Stewart, were you in the room for this discussion at WASAC last week?
Yep.
You were? Okay. Well, I'm going to, if I was not, but if you want to chime in maybe at the end of it, that would be helpful.
Mm.
Essentially, tribal property that is used for essential government services is not charged the property tax. This bill would extend that exemption to property that would be used for economic development purposes. There have been several machinations of this bill working their way through the legislature. In the Senate, specifically last night, the Senate version was pared down to affect just two properties, that being a property up in King County and one in Pierce County, specifically, I think, Emerald Downs, which is the horse racing track, and I'm not sure what the specific property is in Pierce County that a tribe owns, that they're looking for this tax exemption. The current version of the House, it does not get that specific. It's broader and statewide. The concerns that have been specific to the counties, and again, Commissioner Stewart, correct me here if I'm wrong, is at the end of the day, this will result in a tax shift. There are efforts by the tribes to do a payment in lieu of taxes, a PILT. If the economic development property were, say, leased to a private operator, there's also considerations for applying the leasehold excise tax. But the shift has remained a major concern of the Association of Counties. The bill right now is on the House floor calendar, and I know there's discussion within the caucus, the majority caucus, whether or not this bill should be brought forward for a vote. I do think that it's something that your delegation and other legislators, frankly, would like to hear from you on. But I don't know if that's enough of enough information, or Commissioner Stewart, can you fill in some of the blanks maybe that I've left?
Just the thing that was tough. unanimously, the Ledge Steering Committee members were all opposed to this, even though they say that they will make us whole financially. It is still a tax shift because the property tax, they will be exempted from property tax, meaning the overall property tax burden will be shifted to other property owners, to non-tribal property owners. So even if we do get a payment in lieu or something else as cash, it still does shift the property tax burden to non-tribal, and it's an unfair advantage, another unfair advantage that the tribes would have over other businesses. The only other thing I'd add is that they're working on trying to get AWB to be more active, and they asked us to talk with our business community about getting active in this as well, because there is a potential significant impact to non-tribal businesses having unfair competition against them.
You might want to go back and tell them I'm a little bit confused. If they want to pay something in lieu of taxes, equal to taxes, why not just pay the taxes? I think I know the answer.
So are they? Is our delegation looking for something from us, or what?
No, I just—it's an issue. It's important, and frankly, my colleagues at WASAC wanted to know if I could help on this one. And being part of the team, we do that, and we, the lobbyists, do that with each other. And I wanted to bring it forward to you and see if you had some specific direction you wanted to give beyond what the association was doing.
If the Cowlitz tribe gets land designated in Le Centre, there will be 152 acres that would be subject to this bill. So that's why we would have a stake in it.
Just bring it right down party line.
So is it okay if he helps WASAC staff be opposed in this?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioner. That's what I need. Do you have a letter, too, by chance, on CDM services that got circulated that I haven't seen yet?
On what, Mike?
CDM.
On CDM?
Yes, we signed it.
Capital, but
I was the last. I was the last signature, and I signed it either yesterday or the day before that. I forget which.
Okay, it hasn't gotten to me yet.
I'll ask Lene and see where it's at.
Okay, awesome. And then I will distribute it to our notes to some folks. I've been working with Mike Wesson on this one.
Cool.
He was up last week, and I will follow up.
Actually, Mike, she heard her name or something. CDM letter.
I thought Axel sent it to him, but if he did not, I can send it.
Linnea thinks that Axel sent it to you, but she's going to resend it.
Okay.
Just so you have it.
Well, maybe. Yeah, no, I don't see it in my inbox or in my junk mail. So
Linnea will send it to you right now. Thank you, Linnea.
So I'll distribute it. Okay, any other questions for me that I can answer?
Good job, Mike.
I think we're done. Thank you.
Thanks, commissioners. Talk to you soon.
Bye. Okay.
Thanks. All right, Mike. Bye.
That's cool. So Industrial Land Banks is off the House floor and it's onto the other side already. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I saw the Waco invoice.
We good with that?
Absolutely.
So that's $54,000 for the year, and that's paid
$4,500.
Is that a monthly version of the tilt of the year?
Thank you.
What's the?
I thought it was. This is the annual.
Back in the
which is it, Mark?
We're being billed this amount.
But for what? For a
I
month?
Think
for
I,
a
it's,
year?
For, it's from October 1st.
What's that then?
Yeah, are we paying for a year with $5,000, or are we paying for a month with $5,000?
No, I think.
And how's that compared to last time, last year?
You ask that question every time. I need to start answering it before you ask it.
Okay.
I don't know. We're being asked to pay $4,566. I don't know what the $54,800 is, but I'll find out what that is.
Can we bring it back next week then?
Yeah, just find out those answers.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, you can have it.
Okay. I mean, if I multiply that by 12, I wonder if I get 54.8.
I hope not. I hope you do. Have to do that by 12.
Yeah. Looks about right.
4566.
So is that a monthly then?
Times 12.
Steve, that would be that.
$64,799, yeah. So that's a monthly amount.
Wow.
So the question is,
that
what was it compared to last year?
I bet you it's identical. I'll look it up.
We'll get it.
I'll look it up and bring it back.
I thought I heard something about it. Some counties had reduced their amount.
I don't know. For Waco? Maybe.
Pretty stiff.
I guess the question is, do we...
Wait for a week.
Is there value in being a member of the organization?
For all the other elected officials in this place, it is.
Without a doubt, it is. You hear today, the lobby as a group from Waco is very important.
Well, that was WASAC we were talking about. But Waco is just as important for treasurer, clerk, assessor, auditor, sheriff. They do all of the work for them.
What do we pay for WASAC?
I don't know. More than that, I think.
Let's find that out, too.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll come back. And I am curious. One other thing you can do is you can contact them and ask them, do we have the option of reducing that to be full-fledged members?
If I reduce...
Can we pay you less?
If I reduce my departments and not reduce them, I mean, how's that look?
They usually it's a pro rata share. They usually just give you, it's a formula that they use, and like you have X number of population or X percent of the overall state population, so you pay X percent of the bill. But I don't know. That's how
we'll find out how they calculate it.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris is back because we neglected to.
I just wanted you to take a vote in the open public meeting on the Spencer decision.
Oh, so you do need action from us.
I do need action, so we can send out the letter and it'll be official.
Okay. So I guess there is action.
Yeah, I
make the motion.
Yeah, I should have listened to you.
You want to make the motion?
Sure. So I would move that we send the letter with regards to indemnification to attorneys in the Spencer case for
Michael Davidson.
For Michael Davidson
and Sharon Krause.
Sharon Krause.
Indicating that, based on the verdicts of the jury, the county is not going to indemnify them for the judgments or costs, and send copies to the defendants themselves.
So moved.
Yes, I second that. And we got it exactly on record.
Yeah, exactly.
Moved and seconded that we give notice of indemnification.
As moved.
Actually, non-indemnification, right. But yeah.
That's the word. All those in favor?
Aye.
So then.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Russ.
Thank you.
Thanks for clarifying that. Yeah.
Okay. Next three items. Marty Snell's here. He's got three items: fee waiver reporting, fee waiver exceptions, and cap on TIFs. And he's here for that piece. Huh. So. Marty, you want to talk about the fee waiver reporting?
So, last week we gave you a presentation of the revenue model that was put together with my staff in the budget office. And from that, there were questions about the sales tax piece to all these projects. I will say that the property tax piece, the assumptions and the data that Clark County has, there's a higher degree of reliability on those on the model and the assumptions, and then the results of applying the property taxes to these projects. Sales tax is far less reliable. So in the model, I think there was a question during the latter part of the presentation of some of these larger projects with a 20-some million dollar annual sales, and would that be taxed? Adriana's response was, well, we're not looking at each individual project and the reported annual sales and then figuring out from that, is it taxable sales? And then from that, what is the number? The model assumption was, well, based on the county's data, the county's experience, they applied $55 per square foot of space, and whether you're a church or a fueling station or a drywall company, is $55 per square foot per year. So that raised the question. So in raising that question, we're looking at running a different kind of a parallel sales tax estimator by looking at the projects individually and gleaning from their information. Is it taxable or is it not? Maybe go back and ask them, is this taxable or is this not? And then running estimates out from that. We can kind of whittle down the projects because we know, for example, a couple like church projects or fueling islands, there's no sales tax generated from those, so there's no reason to. But others are, the example is the car wash. You know, the car wash is $750,000 in sales, and in fact, those are taxable sales. So is the number X from the model, or is it Y from some other parallel kind of estimator? So I just wanted to let the board know that we're going to be spending some time and effort toward a parallel sales tax estimator so that we can report to you.
So we did not include that. We did not.
It gets the model, the revenue model assumes that regardless of the type of use, mm-hmm. that you're going to generate $55 per square foot of mm-hmm. space.
So it had a calculation of sales tax for, say, the car wash.
Yes.
But it was based on a $55 per square foot calculation.
Correct.
On average of
Correct.
All commercial retail.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
So if we look at the sales tax, and there, you know, sales tax is more difficult for us to kind of peg.
Yeah.
And then we have to find out from the applicant, what is your number, and then what is that gross sales, and of that, you know, grocery is going to be tough because in a grocery there's going to be some items that are taxed and some items that are not taxed.
Project, you pay tax on.
Mm-hmm.
So we just wanted to apprise the board of that latest kind of wrinkle in trying to get some more accurate reporting on the sales tax piece.
Yeah. So the bottom line on that is, I remember when we were first discussing this, Greg Kimsey was very much interested in the metrics. And so that's why we're collecting the information from the actual applicant. There's no one better qualified to do their best estimate as to what they can expect. For instance, the grocer, they know about what the percentage of sales taxable sales there are compared to their gross for them to inform us. So our answers would be, or our estimates, our model would be collected just simply saying, what's your gross amount of sales, and about what percentage of that is, in your best estimate, taxable. And then we would just use that to provide, just let that for every applicant, just answer that one question that we don't have. We're asking for total sales, but we're not asking them for what percentage of those sales are taxable. So that would allow each one to just simply be as good as the estimate of the applicant itself.
How many applicants are you having to go back to for
this?
Well,
that's a good point. We, I believe, as of this morning, maybe late yesterday, if you go on our website and you pull that form off, mm-hmm. we've added two questions. We've actually reworded the original question, but we have three questions. One, what is your annual gross sales? Two, what is your taxable sales, annual taxable sales? And then third question, to the best of their ability, and we're talking, I think, it really would hit with expansions and additions, is if they have a company and they're doing $1 million in sales now and they add, well, what's the increase? So that we might get some even more, we might even get more information from the applicant. Going back, we have about 60 some projects that we would have to, you know, we'll glean from the list what we know we don't need to call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is when we did this originally, not all applicants are actually in the permit center applying for the project. It's their consultant, it's their builder, it's their representative.
Yep.
So I think that it's reasonable for the county to be more prudent in asking questions of applicants from here on out. Please answer this to the best of your knowledge and ability. And if you have some runner applying for the application and the fee waiver, they're not going to know. So it's important for us to get
when the that was part of the conditions when an applicant wants to enroll themselves into the fee waiver program. Part of we're doing something to accommodate them, to make them successful. And in return, they're helping us to provide the metrics.
Yes.
So they're agreeing to provide that information to us. And what I assumed was the amount that we were going to find out how much sales tax, because this was a sales tax revenue question, I thought we were asking that from the very beginning. The fact, if we don't go back and ask those 60 people, applicants, what those numbers are, then the first 6 months is going to be a very poor guesstimate. For instance, the one example that you brought forward, we're off by 540% on the sales tax because we had some algorithm that we plugged in. We shouldn't have to do that. I would think also as part of the contact information for that we keep in this record for each applicant, we would include the contact information for the person who understands the big picture of that.
Right, but that's not always the case when they have consultants applying.
Well, but the consultant can point you to the right one and put that contact information, name, number, email address.
So that's what I think he's just saying. It'll take a little more to get to work back.
Right.
Of those 60, since we didn't ask the information up front, now you got to go through that consultant.
Yeah.
And then try to work back.
Exactly.
It'll take a little longer.
But certainly going forward is the right thing. Yeah. I would also encourage, rather than say what's the dollar amount, as a business owner, I'm not thinking dollar amount. I'm thinking percentage. About 20% of my sales is this, or exports, or sales taxable, whatever. That's going to be much more sensible for them to be able to think that way. And to go back, the timeliness of these reports, the reason that you've got a lot invested in putting these reports out, and if some of these are off by that much, it's worth the time to make a couple of phone calls to get the number, to put it in there, and now we're good.
You threw like a random percentage that I hadn't heard. The 540%.
I actually calculated it last night.
What's the difference? So you said it's 540% off.
It was 8,200 and some dollars compared to 45,000.
How do you get to 45,000?
$750,000 per year in taxable sales times the
1.2% or whatever.
The percentage.
And the 750,000 came from them, or
from them.
Yeah. So the 750 came from them on that.
Right.
Now I assume that there are probably other examples though that are going to have zero taxable sales, like I don't know, a church, that are 540% off the other direction. So before we get into like saying, oh my gosh, we underestimated how much money's coming in.
No, it'll go up and down.
Exactly.
See, that's why the square footage thing doesn't. What we want is have the person who knows what the real picture is, tell us what the truth is, and let it speak for itself, up and down.
And we'll keep, I think, track of what the model produces and estimates, and then we'll keep track of what this parallel, just for our own.
See how close it is.
Yeah,
it's kind of a second opinion.
Is the model and the assumptions built on statistical kind of analysis?
It's a confidence builder.
Is it close or is it way off?
Yeah,
and you can tweak the model results based on examples that Commissioner Madure and Stewart forwarded, the church and the car wash, and you can say, model produced an unreasonable result in this case, so let's apply some human brain power to that and make adjustments to the model results, and then continue to contact the applicants to find out what they believe their taxable sales are going to be. And then we have two to compare.
With one more equation.
It will take some time. I know that.
Right.
The other equation I didn't think I saw was the 360 employees.
Mm-hmm. What? Total, you mean?
359.
The 359 estimated employees. What is the average wage? And of the average wage, I would venture that probably 90% of their salary would go back out to pay sales tax.
I think it's going to go to pay their rent, because most of those are going to be low income
and the person receiving that rent will be paying tax.
The method that I like is that when you do your federal income tax, you put your income down, and there's a table that says if your income is this, you can deduct this much in sales taxes. So for an income of $150, you can deduct about $2,500.
I was just having a sidebar. Companies are loath to give. Remember when we had back in the day there was this family wage calculation, and companies won't give it.
Ask for an average wage.
Well,
that's a market.
That's a huge.
Because if Freddy's puts theirs out, then Safeway's looking and saying, "Hey, what are they paying on average?" All right, we're going to go it becomes a competitive thing.
So when you go back out, it's okay. Everybody made $10 an hour. Times 360, times their 8 hours. It's a huge amount of payroll.
So
it's a huge amount of social services.
So what I'm saying is that comes back in their benefits. All comes back to our community,
and all of the costs for social services, and all the costs for the police, and everything else comes back to us as well.
I had a bullet.
We're already paying that.
That I wasn't.
We just don't have the money.
The bullet point in my slide initially was, I'm not covering the 359 employees what they make and what their economic impact on the county is. That might be better placed than employment security or somebody else, not under my bailiwick.
I was trying to get some credit, because it's not just the sales tax of what goes out the front door. Okay. You got to have someone at the counter paying.
But you got to have the debits as well.
What I just did is I took 360 employees, used $40,000, which is probably too high.
Way too high as an average wage.
Because we have Then I assumed that 2% would be spent on sales tax, because when I do my federal income tax, that's about what the tax table says I can deduct.
Well, okay? I think most areas around here I pay over 8%.
Well, 2% is $288,000 in sales taxes paid by those 360 folks. So there is a way to...
And just sales tax alone, you could add that pretty easy at 2%, which I think is more realistic at 8%.
Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking.
You're all in a philosophical debate.
Well, the idea is we want to keep it simple. We don't want to ask the businesses that we're trying to serve and to encourage to give us information they really don't want to give us about payroll. That's usually something you don't openly share. And yes, there are benefits that we could think of that would help to build the case for or against the fee waivers, but hopefully we're not going there. The idea is to get the basic metrics that would help us just simply bare bones wise to have an idea of what direct benefits, revenue back to the county.
Did we ask the 60, speaking of benefits, did we ask them whether the fee waiver was a significant contributor to their decision to move forward?
Not on these current 60. We did the first...
Seems like if we wanted full information as to whether the fee waivers mean anything or not, you'd want to ask them that. You'd want to ask... Was the fee waiver a significant determining factor in your decision to build? Because otherwise, you're just giving them money that they didn't ask for and they don't want and they wouldn't have needed. So, I mean, if you're trying to have good information, then it seems like you'd want to ask that, right?
It was low. And we anticipated, because their mind was already pretty much made up, because they were planning a year ahead of time. But today, that would be a whole different...
It may very well be. Again, I totally am, I believe that the data speaks for itself. It's just, you ask the question. If you're, if you're not afraid of the answer, you're not afraid to ask the question. And I wouldn't be afraid to ask the question. And if it does say that, all of these people said this is a big deal for us, then, great. And then you know. And if some of them say it's a big deal, then you say, well, what's common about them? What is it about them that makes it a big deal for them? And then you can start looking at it and say, well, this is who it's most important for, which is what I was originally trying to get to, was targeting it.
They moved it out of their garage and built.
Maybe. And that's, that was my original, based on the surveys, my original belief is that, like the small businesses where they're cash poor are the ones who need it the most. And Walmart and the car wash, don't need it. But they may. They very well may have said, we weren't going to do this. We wouldn't have actually invested in the community without this.
I was hoping not to get into a philosophical discussion.
This is not a philosophical. This is asking a question. You want more information. I'm just saying, can we ask for more information?
All we wanted was the metrics that we said that we're going to, and we promised to grade Kim.
Isn't a metric for success knowing whether or not that it was a significant reason for moving forward?
Well, we've got to get credit for all the benefits that we got. And we're not doing that.
Well, and I'm saying it might show that it is truly a benefit for it. But I'm just saying, why wouldn't you ask the question? I mean, it's a simple question of, was this, you can even say, was this a factor in your decision to build? I mean, you can take significant out of it if you think that's a pejorative term. Say, you know, was the fee waiver a factor in your determination of moving forward? I mean, it's a simple question. And if we're going to
speak about moving forward,
well, are you guys not going to just ask the question?
For the same reason that Marty said, get
into it. Okay, wait.
But I also want wages included then.
Well, they may not give you wages. Well,
I think you're getting way off.
You're going to ask.
We're not. Here. No. We're having a conversation here. So hold on. Thanks, though.
No. But we could ask. I mean, if we want to know as much information as possible.
Sure.
To show, because I mean,
there you go.
Steve doesn't believe that it's paying for itself.
That is true.
I believe it is. And because you have to go back and, when you go back and ask those 360 people who've been unemployed, living with their parents, now they got their own place, if that helped them. You know, it's huge.
I don't think they can afford it in their own place, but you know.
To think that we treat that many jobs.
You're right, and I don't mean to minimize. Yeah. You know, that's very true. And I think it doesn't hurt to ask. Someone can always say, you can always just leave it blank. It's not a necessary field. So if you're okay with asking that piece of information, I'm okay with asking for wages.
I've had a guy who wants to go up there to Dollar's Corner and build a super market to replace the Texaco that was there and whatnot. And that's what he's been asking me. How long is that going to be on? I keep telling him, it might be gone tomorrow. You better get out there and build.
That is the good news with a temporary.
So you give them they're looking. They're looking. And I think it took a while for them to get into queue to do that. So anyway.
Is that okay then?
So on that, it comes down to the same reason that Marty came up with. Depends on who you're asking. You could be asking the consultant. They say, well, I really prefer to be in there because I get a percentage of the cost of this thing. What you're doing is you're getting subjective information depending on who you're talking to. Basically, in contrast to, just tell me the numbers.
We're not
asking for opinions. None of this is opinions.
Sure it is. Your projected sales in a new facility is your opinion. It is your best guess.
It's your estimation.
It's an estimate. So is it fact? But is it fact? When you started your business, did you have factually, you knew exactly what your sales were going to be the first 5 years? So you had an estimate. Was it 100% right?
Nothing's 100% right.
Exactly. So it was an estimate. Just like it is an estimate if you ask them as the owner, and you just say it. You know, it's like, was the owner of this, was the developer of this property, was this a factor moving forward? Is the developer of this property, what is the estimate of what the average wages would be? It's an estimate. That's all it is.
We've adopted
it's not
a
opinion,
resolution.
It's an estimate.
And the resolution directed us what we're going to ask for.
So then why are you asking for more information? If the resolution doesn't have that, you're asking for more.
The resolution did ask us for metrics. We can't
do this is a metric for success
without the sales tax.
And you can't
component.
Do a true metric without knowing salary information and knowing whether it's actually a factor in them.
Already we've seen things that were not included that would give us credit for what we've done. So
I'm simply asking for information, and so are you. Are we okay with getting information or not?
It's beyond what we adopted in the resolution.
I understand your point on this and your opinion, because you don't want to get the information. That's fine. If you don't want information,
okay,
I can't stop you. So are we going to put it on there or not? You said, like, you put yours on for that.
No, you beat the horse to death, no.
So we don't ask for either of those two items?
You guys are so brutal.
No, we need to do what the resolution said to do.
You're hypocritical.
Which is get the sales tax revenue so that we can actually get the metrics. That was part of the resolution.
You didn't get the answer you wanted, so you want to use different information. You can say it.
No, it's so much.
That's what happened.
So much
I've talked with a lot of people about it, and that's what I've heard. That's great. That's fine. But if you want true information, then get information.
So there were a couple other questions related to
okay, go ahead.
The resolution itself.
We're not answering
questions.
I'm going
to send these two guys down to your office afterwards.
No, I'm listening to the sidebar.
If they don't make the case, then don't ask the question.
There And I'm looking at the slide that came up here, where the car wash was $26,000 in application fees. The traffic impact fees was $103,000. So, as an example, if we're looking at the taxable retail sales being very questionable based on the assumption of $55 per square foot, and it's the taxable amount times 750, then that's a different number, right? It could be $35,000-$40,000. But we're still at $103,000 in traffic impact fees. We have some projects that the traffic impact fee are hundreds of thousands of dollars, one at like 5.25. And the question comes up, you know, was there a discussion about trying to cap the amount of traffic impact fees waived? And that's why Heath is here, because, you know, his ability to absorb that kind of hit to the general, to the road fund, excuse me, you know, in the case of a Fred Meyer fueling station, $527,000 on a traffic impact.
And if you
for recall, a gas station.
For a gas station. Yeah, and fuel is not sales taxed.
Motor vehicle fuel tax.
Correct. So the question is...
And earlier today, Heath and his folks just went through the 20-year plan, and you saw the $100 million delta. And if you look at the road fund diversion to the general fund, add to that traffic impact fees, plus we're not taking a 1%, if we did all those things, we could eliminate a pretty sizable chunk of that $100 million deficit. So the question here is...
You're assuming we get nothing back in gas tax. We get 80% of most of our projects paid for.
Right, but if you build a brand new fueling station, people are going to go there as opposed to this one. It's not going to have a dramatic effect on the total amount of gas sold in the county. What does that is more tourism, more residents.
It depends. We're on the I-5 corridor. We're border here with Oregon. So the more convenient you make it for people to buy gas here in Clark County, the more road gas taxes we have to support it.
But a concept,
we're making a very important. Well, I don't want to interrupt.
A concept we always talk about is cannibalization. You know, if Killian puts his shopping mall in, mm-hmm. it's a mile from my house. Why am I going to go to Westfield Mall to shop when I can go to that one? So instead of spending my money in one place, I'll spend it in another. There won't be a net increase in spending. It'll just shift where the money goes.
The point of travel will have less impact on our road because it's closer to your home.
And it could very well be a decision maker to say whether or not they're going to build that gas station in the county.
Therefore, that intersection because of him.
Maybe people be buying more cars because there's a new gas station. So why not get a new car? As long as we're just making stuff up.
Traffic impact fees that we've waived up to this point is a little over $1.6 million.
Yeah, and another consideration is Walmart wants to build a new store on 134th.
Oh, let's make sure we give hundreds of thousands of dollars to them.
Yeah, they're like the fourth biggest corporation on the planet.
Saying they don't need it.
They have as much wealth in that one family as the bottom 40% of the entire
corporate
country.
Corporate welfare.
So on 137th and Mill Fourth Plain, why was it they didn't build that?
Which one?
That's in the city.
Where are you talking about?
The traffic impact fee. Wasn't that Walmart they're going to build out there?
On Fourth Plain, you mean?
Yeah.
Fourth Plain.
No, it's because the market went soft on them, so they didn't build it. That's why they haven't built it on 134th, too.
In other words, economic reasons.
Yeah, economic and reasons. Market reasons, not TIF reasons.
Them hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It wasn't the traffic
exactly
impact fees,
it was
their market. I mean, you know better than anything. Your business is in the city, for God's sakes. Did you pay traffic impact fees?
Actually,
no. It was already paid.
How did you get out of it?
It was existing building.
There you go. So you didn't build a building. If you would have, you would have paid.
I have a question. Going back to traffic impact fees.
Correct.
And those impacts. They were never challenged or debated, so we threw out there the best case scenario, like we did with Chuck's Produce.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck's Produce, $940,000 of traffic impact fee out of the gate.
Oh, yeah.
And they paid how much?
Four something. I mean, that's the total, but then
that they would.
They first said no.
60%.
$480,000, but then you have half of that because they got a 50% waiver. at the time the of old that fee. Resolution.
Yeah, the older resolution.
So my point of saying that is that so many times a person had to step up and pay the traffic impact fee in its entirety, they would challenge our mathematics.
Yeah. Almost always there's an independent fee calculator.
And I remember another one on a hotel up on 134th that we tried to charge a traffic impact fee for every room in the hotel as if it was occupied every night. So those are the things that we put out there first, and then when they come back to start talking to us, it gets reduced down to a more reality. So
it does.
So the numbers that we're using are those numbers first out of the box that we would ask for.
Not always, because these are fees waived. Yeah. That means they've been vetted, whether they're going out of the box or they've done an independent fee calculation, and they've submitted a traffic study, and we've said, yes, this looks good. Here's the fee, and when you pick up your building permit, you won't pay that traffic impact fee. So those are actual dollars, whether they've been through the ITE manual and just the formula or the independent calculation.
But they don't all walk in the front door and say, hey, that sounds better to me. How much did you want?
So beyond the philosophy of this, what are you actually asking us to do?
Sharing.
Oh, I know, you are. They came to us for a reason, so I wasn't sure why.
So we're waiving, it's just the math of the traffic impact fees waived to the potential revenue may become even more skewed as larger projects and traffic impact fees are waived.
Yeah, and waiving fees up to a certain level benefits mid-sized to small companies, but multinationals, nationwide companies like Fred Meyer, Kroger, and Costco and Walmart. You know, Heath has got additional. We'd like to spend some road fund money in the St. John's Barberton area to improve the desirability of that for economic development, but he doesn't have the resources.
That's the part that's going to be annexed into the city, isn't it?
Not anytime soon.
I think we ought to fix that revenue before we give it away.
Yeah, we have to remember where we came from. What is it, a year ago? Well, I remember when I was running for office, jobs crisis. We were in a jobs crisis. Businesses were failing. We were in the tank. Businesses were choosing not to build in Clark County. Now businesses are prospering. They're doing well. They're choosing to build here now. And we're assuming that, if we just simply put in place those same deterrents that affected their economic decision, then we'll get all this money. And we're shooting ourselves in the foot. We're putting the same discouragement in place of the businesses that we had a year ago when we were in the tank. It's working. We already have a built-in evaluation time on this resolution to evaluate it, and already we're well on the path to reducing our unemployment rate. It has good indications.
So wait, hold on. So first of all, just because this revisionist history always bugs me, when you were running for office, there was a fee holiday in place that was instituted before you came into office. That fee holiday reduced it 50% for commercial retail. It reduced it 100% for non-commercial. So this is something that didn't just sprout up when you came in here. We adjusted it when you came in here. We broadened it, and we gave more of a break to commercial retail. So that's the only thing that changed. As far as the jobs are coming piece, you as a business owner, I'm sure would not take credit as a county commissioner that has been here a year for the change in economic circumstances of not only our county, but of the state and nation, which have actually created some job growth. Neither would you be able to claim credit for the housing development.
You have a point here, right?
Yeah, I do. Making it. The housing development that we have seen increase, and housing is still paying TIFs and development fees, yet we saw housing permit applications increasing at a much more rapid rate than job development applications.
Marty, and our commercial rate is way up from where it was.
Is it higher than our residential percentage increase?
No, not higher.
They're both up.
Commercial is up way higher than it was before.
It is, but not higher than residential, and residential's paying all the fees. So how do you claim ownership?
I don't want to go back and debate the fee holiday to.
I just can't listen to the rhetoric without, you know, actually counteracting and with some truth.
But the thing is, we're not here to remove it. We're here to get some a little bit closer, whether we're making or breaking.
I guess the message from me is just a cautionary note that the traffic, as I was on the phone with Tyler here, that the traffic impact fees that we're waiving are very difficult to overcome.
Right.
And if we see, I'm just saying, if we see another three or four or more where we're waiving $500,000, then
it's going to hurt.
Those are, you know, that's $2 million, and where's that money going to come from?
We talked about that when we implemented this. We said we probably couldn't handle three Walmarts in a row.
So, but food for thought for all of you.
Mm-hmm. So, as you see those, how do we see them coming in enough advance that if that situation occurs, that we're aware of it, that we can address it or not, but at least be aware of it?
Well, when I send you the monthly reports, you can look at.
Would you get
not? But that's after the fact, right?
We're looking for a phone call here.
Ahead of the curve before the wave smashes down upon us. You know, having some idea of that scenario is on its way.
I would say I'd be looking at that very carefully in the next few months.
Okay, and we will.
I'll huddle up and see what I'm seeing in the tea leaves and get with Keith and say, these are some things that if they come to pass, here's the potential impact. And
well, and the good news is TIFs are going down. They will go down with the CFP and the concurrency changes that we're doing. For whoever's paying them.
This brings to mind one of the things that we keep putting on the back burner, and that was to look for fewer traffic impact fee districts.
Yeah, I talked with Steve Schulte. I was going to bring that up in my part.
Yeah, that was really important that we look at that and try to implement that, because we can use it.
I pushed on them after the work session. I talked with them after the work session about, like, let's get on that. And there are simple ways that we can do it. Like, at some point in the distant past, they took North Orchards and South Orchards split them. It used to be one TIF district. That's a simple change that would create a significant change in impact fee calculations in Orchards. There's a couple other like that where you could combine a couple of districts, create fewer, create better flexibility, and it would also create a lower calculation in some of those.
And that's where I was going.
So they are working on.
I think it's important that
they will be working on that now.
We get done so that when we come out of this fee holiday, we can go back into an adjusted fee rate.
Fair enough. That's fair. That's totally fair. Because what is fair to say is you don't want to go back to the same rates that were creating significant barriers to entry for whichever businesses. We can argue which businesses they are or aren't, but you don't want to create those significant barriers. We all agree on that.
We got those calculations from Seattle. That's where we started off to get those. So.
Okay. So
that was good time.
There's no appetite for capping.
Within the next few months, we're going to get some information about,
we're good.
You see something that's going to smack us upside the head.
In your reporting, it would be good to keep separate the road fund from the general fund, because that's not just us and our staff that are looking at that. The citizens are looking at that, and they need to make sure that they don't just think it's all going to the general fund.
On the revenue side, we'll break out by
just label it.
Although it's all property
tax, even including the state, the massive state share.
So have we covered the discussion on cap on tips?
Yes.
Yep. That was it.
Oh, we are okay. Paid.
And fee waiver reporting.
Just a little bit of.
Did you want to say something?
I just more data than anything.
You're going to have to learn. You got to jump right in.
I'm listening, taking it all in.
Okay.
The TIP revenues that come in vary from year to year, obviously, depending on where the development is. Looking since 2007, it ranges from 3.2 down to 1.2, roughly. And then that's revenue in, but we don't necessarily spend that every year because it depends on which projects we move forward. But it does, we can use TIP revenues as what they call a private share of our projects.
which does score us point on grant applications when we move. You know, if we go to the state or the federal government for grants, we will get points for that. I don't know exactly what they are, but they look for a private share. And we can consider TIFs a private share. So just
and we are collecting the private share, the TIFs, from the residential, the non-qualifying.
Right. Steve, you brought up something really important when we were talking about that.
I did?
My train of thought. I think it was you had the good idea.
No.
It could have been me.
Probably.
It had to do with the impact on TIFs. Oh, shoot. You said that there's another part of that.
The regional share?
Regional TIF.
Yeah.
You talked about. Still don't have my full thought back. But what we're looking at you talked about by going back and broadening the
TIF credits.
The district and TIF credits. We go back to people that have TIF credits that's in a certain district. Mm-hmm. But they also own property over here. Yeah. That would allow them to use their TIF credits over there and would encourage there maybe a development.
Yeah,
but we have several people that have quite a bit of these TIF credits. And that might be another answer to institute building that may not be going on.
I agree. Well, and the flip side of that was raised to me after that, I was talking with someone and they were talking about, well, if you were in a TIF district that you were the only one who had TIF credits and there were people looking for TIF credits, then if you broadened it out and then maybe somebody else is a seller of TIF credits now for these same people, maybe there's the flip side of it where like you had a lock on the market and you can charge more, and maybe you can't charge quite as much now, but we've heard a lot more about people who can't find enough customers for their TIF credits, not the other way around. So I still think that it's probably still value. I think
still
it's still
great. Talk to Dale about this.
Yeah, I don't know that.
All right. We're looking at all different angles. We're going to come out with something good.
The last item on the fee waiver program is something that actually I brought this to the board in mid-November in 2010 because the first resolution was adopted, and I had a bunch of people, hey, I'll apply for what I need to apply for now, even though I've been in a code enforcement case for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we have some folks asking, well, I'm going to apply for this business that I've gotten kind of slapped because I've been doing it illegally for however long. And so am I eligible for waiving fees?
So my answer, are they invested? Have they already paid their fees?
Well,
if they haven't paid their fees, they're not
applied.
Invested, right?
They're operating a business. They never came in for any kind of permit or approval or review or anything.
It's like an amnesty.
We didn't get it before either, did we?
For a pardon. The outcome of that discussion was, look, if somebody is blatantly just opening a business up and forget permits and forget whatever, it's on them. If I buy a shop and the tenant improvement had been done, I'm an unsuspecting owner, buyer, then maybe you should give them a break. I have people who are, they're bad actors, and do we say, sure, we'll give you a pass?
We have done amnesty type provisions with regards to fees, not this kind of fees.
Fines.
So, like, with they're in code enforcement, you know, and they're getting fines racked up because they're bad actors and they're doing bad things. We have in the past said, look, we just whatever time our staff is spent on that, you got to pay for that. But all of the fines and the penalties associated with it will be waived if you just get into compliance on this. A little different than saying, well, then we'll give you pay for all of your fees. So, you know, the time spent has always been charged to those people. The time of, you know, trying to collect money from them or trying to get them in compliance, they always had to pay that. They just didn't get penalized for it. So this would be not just not penalizing them. This would be giving them a benefit for having been bad. Because if they wouldn't have been bad, they wouldn't have made the cut. Because they would have been before this. So they will be being rewarded for having been bad if we allow them to apply under the fee waiver.
This only applies to businesses. And if they go through the business process, the reason that we have permits to start with is so that we ensure the safety, that we ensure that they comply, that people are going to, it's an environment that is healthy and it's not going to be bad stuff happening out there. This facilitates them to be able to do that. The public safety, all of those benefits happen if we allow that. And you're not talking about the wineries, right? We were already extending the wineries, the fee waivers to the wineries, right?
Yes, and there's a wrinkle to that because we've had wineries in different code enforcement statuses for a while. And I think that if I'm kind of picking up the read here is, you know, we want to encourage the wineries to come into compliance, and that means if we're waiving now new application fees for this building permit or that building permit, then go ahead and waive them, right?
Because it will be a new application that under the existing code, that's not in question. I mean, new applications are all subject to the fee waiver if it's for a business.
If they qualify, they qualify.
Right.
But to your point, though, if the premise is you come in and get a whatever permit or approval that you need to from the county. I'm going to open a business. I'm going to change this warehouse into something else. I need a tenant improvement. Okay? That's the premise. And you apply for the permit, and you apply for a fee waiver, and you get them both. This is, I moved in, I blew off the permit, now I'm coming back and saying, oh, I know I occupied this structure illegally, but can I get a fee waiver, please?
And can they get the permit to comply?
They will have to get the permit
to comply. To get that.
Yeah.
That's what we have code enforcement for. That's what we have law.
Just be specific for a minute for the wineries. We've already communicated to the wineries that the fee waivers apply to them. The code that was really not really finished until the last part of last year, that we are extending mm-hmm. fee waivers to them, all of them, right?
There's no exceptions. I think Jeremy had a couple questions about some, again, old permits.
Yeah, but
well before. Well before.
Goodwill, we've communicated with them. There's still, Jeremy, whoever it is, all the wineries are... They're all applying fee waivers,
and it's a small,
whatever the amount is. Yeah, okay.
For applications that they have now, but like say Jeremy's a good example where, if they already had applications that they applied for and were granted, they paid for those.
If it's paid, we're not going to give any refunds. Yeah,
right. And so this isn't about them.
Jeremy's a good example. If nothing else, he'll come into compliance.
Yeah.
He will come into
that's
code.
And that's the ultimate goal.
You know, we'll have him up to speed.
So if I am I'm a business owner, then on my, I was a bad actor. I chose to blow off Marty and his shop, and I had code enforcement on me saying, you have to do applications, you have to get permits for this, and trying to enforce the law, because that's their job. And they're down there, they're working, man, they're on that floor, and they're trying to get people to comply with the law. And then we're going to come in, I just can't see how...
We did that for Jeremy, didn't we?
No, we didn't. That's the point.
We did.
We literally did not. That's what I'm saying. He paid for his permits for all that stuff.
The first one. The last one. He still doesn't have his building up to code.
He paid for all the permits for the things that were before the fee holiday, for applications that come under.
Didn't do his pizza oven yet.
They're all getting applications right now, but that's not the point. The point is that they actually paid for permits during that time frame. If you want to forgive code enforcement actions, that's one thing, but to reward people for not going through the process, literally telling us they weren't going to go through the process, because they know they need the permits, because they're in code enforcement actions on this, so they know they had to get the permits, and then we're going to say, not only do you get out of Dutch for the code enforcement, you know, for coming into line, but we're going to give it all to you for free.
I think that's what we did to the wineries.
We did not. No.
We didn't?
No.
Because I know Jeremy, even without a complaint, even when he put his pizza oven in.
Yeah, we had him come in and get permits for it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
But he was
still
there.
And he still has a lien on his property.
He got that afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think
for all his permits, he has a lien on his property.
Yeah, yeah, you have to draw the line. I mean, you have
right.
to... You can't keep giving them that, but it sure be nice to have everybody in compliance. And we have We have a book of people of out of compliance.
And that's who this is for, is not, I mean, we're thinking wineries. I mean, give me an example of a business.
There's something in my inbox somewhere that somebody's, I moved in, maybe some small machine shop, or I don't know what it is, but it was a code enforcement case, and now he's coming in saying, oh, can I get my permit now for free? Even though he moved in.
You're only thinking
of
one business?
There are more than that. I mean, they come in kind of dribs and drabs.
Well, I would assume that whatever the history on these things, the public good is served when they go through the permit process and they're up to code, everything's up to snuff, and they have for some reason they didn't want to pay it before because they're going to have to go through the same process whether they pay it or not. They didn't before, so at this point we help them to comply. The community becomes safer, get her done. You're only talking about a few exceptions here. It call it amnesty. It makes everybody current.
But it's a few now. But you're setting the precedent that.
Yeah, if there's more out there, come on in and get your permit.
No. The precedent is be a bad actor. We will reward you. The laws don't matter. Because we have laws to bring people into compliance. That's why we have them, is to prevent these businesses from operating illegally and damaging public safety. Public safety is what we're all about in this. That's why we have laws. So at that point, why have the law? Why don't we just say, okay, well, no, you're gonna ignore the law anyway, because we know that if you ignore it, then you can come in, you get stuff for free. We will reward you for your bad behavior. That just doesn't...
Isn't that the same thing that we did when we had when people owed us fines and penalties? We did the same thing there. We said, we're going to waive everything except for the actual true cost to the county. Come on in and pay your bill so we get you off the book.
For this length of time, and it was only for...
The other day in our consent agenda, we had to authorize the auditor, I think it was, or the treasurer, to write off a bunch of bills he couldn't collect.
So here's the difference.
But the most important thing is that they now come into compliance.
Yeah.
And they
now
come in, more importantly, they come into code.
So the difference is that the fine... I don't disagree them coming into compliance is a good thing. The fine difference between fines and fees being waived in this, fines and fees were not costs incurred that will then be passed on to our taxpayers. If you're waiving development fees and traffic impact fees for these bad actors, you are shifting the burden of the bad actor to the taxpayer. Period. Like, that is what's happening. Whereas the fines and fees, that's on there to get somebody's attention or to be a lien on their property, but it's not an actual cost that any taxpayer would ever have to pay for if we don't collect it. So there was no cost shift. What you're suggesting would be a cost shift.
A cost shift is significant when you're talking about the big county and gosh, my bills went up so high because what did you do? You let one company who had to pay $1,300, it's not a significant issue. So you're talking about a few exceptions. In fact, it may be a really good idea for us to send the message out there that whoever is operating businesses that have not gotten their permits, come on in. And they may say, oh, I've been operating for 7 years without a permit, and I was afraid to say so. Well, welcome to Clark County. We're business friendly now, and you win because you're a legitimate business now. The community wins because you're coming in compliance, and maybe the economy wins a little bit because maybe they have to do a little work and employ some people to make some improvements.
They're already there, though. Why would they employ more people? I'm with you on the first two. That was a leap on the third one.
Because they may have to do some improvements for their facility to make it current and compliant.
See, and that's the problem, is that ultimately, whether they have to pay for the permit or not, most of those bad actors are still going to want to hide because the permit process costs the citizens money to go through. It also costs the building owners a lot of times to actually do the improvements necessary to get up to code. So most of those bad actors are not going to be moved by not having to pay the fee. And the ones that are, you are rewarding to give the precedent to others that maybe if I'm a bad actor, I can get the freebie. So I don't see the benefit that you are seeing based on the reality of actually having been here long enough to see what businesses do here. And I know you're a business person, but you're not one avoiding, you didn't avoid getting your permit.
Let's go back to the question. The question was, how do we treat those people who have been out of compliance are coming in now? I think that we'll treat them just like they're coming in for the first time. We're going to benefit down the road by having them come into code, and we won't have to go back out there with code enforcement over and over and over again. Right. We won't end up going back out there and leaning the property and then coming back and compromising on the financial dollar and reducing it all the way down to almost nothing after we've gone through all that other stuff.
Somebody's got to defend the taxpayers here, man. I mean, I'll go ahead and do it as long as I'm here, but I hope somebody will come in to actually defend the taxpayers instead of promoting corporate welfare and shifting the burden from bad actors to our citizens.
No, you're not.
That's what you're doing.
No, you're
literally doing exactly that.
You're prolonging it. The bad actor's going to be out there. You're going to be out of code.
Maybe we
someone's going to get hurt. We're going to go back out there. We're going to leave his property. He's going to come back in. We'll go through the judicial system. He'll come back in. We'll compromise, reduce all those fees and fines and penalties, and he'll have to go back and get up to code.
I don't understand. One day I will figure out why. Man, you guys squeeze pennies to death on some things, and on others, you're throwing money at people.
I just happen to have a good example walking in my door today.
All right.
He has been trying to get into compliance forever.
Sure.
He has been penalized and fined to the point to where he says, I'm out of here. You've already leaned my property, and yet I've been working with you to come into compliance. I'm now moving my business out. And he moved his business out, and we didn't get anything to it. We still have a lien on his property for something that we were working with in the code.
Was he a Boy Scout? Was he, like, completely not guilty of anything? Because I haven't met one of those people yet in my 10 years.
I'll tell you who it was later. Basically, to answer your question, I think we have two votes to give it to him.
Yeah, welcome, give it all away.
Welcome everyone into compliance.
Let us know how much general fund we're going to have to use to keep covering all of this.
He will. He says he'll come back every 30 years.
That's great.
No.
How healthy is your fund? Don't you have like $6 million?
The 10-11 fund is healthy. We have a healthy 10-11 fund.
What is the balance? Cash?
I'd have to ask Mark Gassaway. It's
like $6.5 million. I asked.
And you're going to be using a majority of that for your software upgrades. How's your staffing funding going? Because 10-11 is different.
That's going pretty well.
How's the remodel?
We have
it's actually coming along.
We have nine.
I would go to that remodel.
We're not done yet,
but it's under budget, on time.
And the permit center remodel is going well, and I hope to have it open probably the week after the state of the county address.
How much general fund do we use for staffing a CD right now? How much is general fund paying?
So I have the general fund programs of, like, you know, animal control, code enforcement, fire marshal.
Yeah.
Of the 10-11 subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
It's land use. It's 400 maybe.
400,000.
I'm thinking 300,000 to 400,000.
It's a lot less. A lot less than what it used to be. Like, I think we had two million.
Well, that was because the board made an active decision years ago.
Yeah.
But when I was here to actually make sure that development paid the costs that they incurred, as opposed to being borne by the citizens, we are shifting obviously again.
Well, we have some work in that group that we don't charge a fee to.
Well, we do. We added $94 for the tire kickers to provide a better service when they come in to ask questions.
That's true.
That helps pay for the costs.
I know.
That is
And we all supported that.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
We should end on a positive, man. That's good. Yeah.
Okay.
Everything's good.
All right.
Thank you.
Moving on. Anything else?
I'm going to think twice before inviting you back.
It was that Heath. Heath would not stop talking.
He really is a talkative sort.
You got to watch him. All right.
Kick it in. Word in edgewise.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Okay. Do you have anything?
I already updated you guys on the conversation about the TIF districts, because there is, and they get, like I said, we had a good conversation about, there are some simple, you're right, there are some simple ways that we can consolidate a few and actually make it work, and so Steve is getting started on that.
That sounds great.
That's good. And the only other thing I had was this, let's see. So I don't. I think you guys already saw this. This is the packet. This is the packet that we leave with. Well, that we don't leave with legislators, but it has. You want to know what Waco does? The Waco agenda, 2014 legislative priorities for Waco are in there as well as for WASAC, and has a full kind of. This is what WASAC is up to. And then
you got numbers?
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm not done.
No, I just answered his question. Sorry.
So, and then this is the steering committee agenda and a bunch of information. Like, Mike went through some bills.
Uh-huh.
We go through a ton more at WASAC. So this has a bunch of different bills on there. And I want to make sure you guys have updates. I wrote notes on a few of them in the margin, not all. And it's just notes that I wrote for myself about where a bill was, or there are a couple where WASAC was opposing a substitute of a bill, but, you know, was okay with the original. So all of that's in there.
Got it.
Thank you. That's a good job. We'll have to bring you an update on when Southwest Washington Clean Air.
Excellent. And that's all I have.
We canceled because of snow.
Nice work. Well, and I saw that wasn't the Urban County Policy Board. We walked by there, and they ended up got snow canceled.
Yeah, they had the same meeting in the afternoon. We would have made it, but they started at 8 in the morning, and it didn't clear until after 11.
Okay.
No, that's it.
I snuck out and got into Oracle and looked up what we paid for Waco back to 2009. The current bill is $3,000 greater than 2013, but then you can see it was flat from 12 to 13. It jumped $6,000, jumped substantially.
Whoa. What happened between 2009 and 2010?
I'd have to get on the horn and talk to somebody. But, you know, it goes up and down, and I don't know what the basis for that is, but I'll get on the horn to these.
Like how they calculate it would be.
I heard it one time, and I don't recall. But that's a huge jump. David.
I'm good.
Oh, man. Holly.
Thanks, Steve.
Yes, we made initial inquiries about recognizing Neil Burkhart, the gentleman who tackled the woman and the gun away. I was remembering that the sheriff's office and VPD, I think, both have like citizen awards. So I contacted the sheriff's office and wondered what if they were going to do something. Would they like to do something with you all as a board? So the sheriff is interested in making a joint presentation of whatever you all want to present to him, but also
I'm here for your entertainment, Pauline.
They're going to give him the Citizen Service Medal, which is a medal given to
That's
people
awesome.
Who perform acts that jeopardize their own safety while attempting to save the life of another human being.
Wow, awesome.
So it would be pin on, not hang down. But so if you're interested in bringing him here at some point,
we've
made inquiries at the VA. The guy hasn't been interviewed. He hasn't spoken publicly.
Is he willing? Does he want to?
He's willing to talk, apparently, because the stories have said people who are interested in talking to him, media who are interested in talking to him, need to go through the PIO at the VA. Mary has made that phone call, but we have not heard anything back.
So
we figure he's just being kept buttoned down for a while until.
So we would give him recognition at the state of the county address.
I was thinking more of an evening hearing.
Yeah, I think I had more. I was thinking more in mind of a ceremony, a proclamation, a resolution, a presentation, something at a board meeting.
Okay. Yeah, and have the sheriff. He's the one that gives it. Have him pin it on.
If you want, we could write a resolution.
That
if you
would
want
be great.
To have a life-saving plaque that the county gives rather than the sheriff.
Well, the sheriff.
Something like that.
Sounds like they have already something. We certainly welcome them to present that. It's a medal, right?
Right, right. It has to be ordered, so it will take probably at least 3 weeks. So we might not even make the state of the county.
We recognize other great events and special people during our state of the county address, and this is just really appropriate for that. It's something that a lot of people are not aware of.
But Holly said lead time on a medal is 3 weeks.
Well, no, but not necessarily on that. We're doing the employee service. No, well, we're doing the employee service awards as part of the state of the county, right?
The neighborhood association awards, the volunteer awards.
Right. Yes. Exactly. So we do those awards anyway. Can't we just wrap an award of some type into that? I mean, it doesn't mean not in place of getting the medal, obviously.
In addition to.
Okay.
Right. Well, they frankly, when I called there, they went, That's a good idea. We hadn't thought about that.
Good.
So,
all right, we'll chat with Mary about an alternative that we could do between now and state of the county, you know, some sort of nice plaque or something.
Yeah.
And they're also working up letters of thanks to the law enforcement agency heads.
They did awesome.
Just before, copy for each of you, just before
Okay, so this is a draft of what we're proposing.
I got information from Kevin Elias at Major Crimes that gave me a little bit better idea of which agency people did what, so I might be able to tailor the letter just with a tweak here and there.
This is... We had four agencies, I think, respond.
More than that, actually.
FBI, VPD, campus
BCSO,
police,
yeah,
CCSO.
Cameras was there.
I'm reluctant to recognize one.
Oh, no, this is just an example.
That's
of
an example. We'll recognize all of them.
It's just changed the name and address up at the top. But this is an example. But FBI was there, two agents. Two investigators with the VA's Inspector General office and the Inspector General jumped in their car and drove down from Seattle. They were here by 8 o'clock that night.
Wow.
Camas had three detectives.
Yeah, but those responded.
FBI had two.
I hate to recognize the guys that got here 4 hours later.
Well,
I'd like to recognize the FBI, the policemen from Battleground.
Yeah, the folks who locked the facility down.
Cleared
the building and all that.
This letter does say we were thankful to everybody who responded.
But specifically specifically sent him to the first responders, is that?
Well, the first responders were VPD and CCSO.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there would be a letter to the sheriff. There would be a letter to McElvin at... Vancouver, I think, at Camas.
Who took charge of the command center?
CCSO didn't.
CCSO.
They did?
Because it was county building. But they and VPD secured the building and cleared the building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
FBI did some investigation, some interviews. Mm-hmm. Some others, like VA, would secure the outside of the building.
We went and visited Mark and I... I thought we'd just be in and out, and we were there for an hour.
Yeah.
And the conversations and the recommendations from all the staff people, from what we saw, they praised the professionalism of all the police officers, and the officers in turn praised about how calm the people were and how efficient everybody. I mean, it was like clockwork.
Well, I remember you were saying that, and I made a couple phone calls over there to... Yeah. Gather some string about it, and so I've tried to reflect those comments in this letter.
Okay, so drive on with that. That's a good effort.
Good effort.
Okay, is that it, Holly?
That's it for me.
Okay.
Let's see. I one of the things that has come up today was that we have departments that have been given the authority to put lien on, and then by the time the lien gets on, then we get involved as county commissioners. And I didn't know what our policy was. I would think that before we attach a lien to a property, that we at least be notified. The one case that came to mind was Mr. Teeter. Well, Mr. Teeter was a good example. We attached liens and liens and liens over the years. Instead of solving the problem, we had a department doing all this legal work back and forth. You have to renew the liens or something like that. That things have to come to a conclusion. And one that surprised me today when I come in was Yuri from the dog kennels. And he was working with us over the last couple of years. He had built fences and vegetation and more fences. And somewhere in our department, we were telling him that he wasn't in compliance yet. Then we made the mistake of zero noise. He got ticketed and fined for that, went to a hearing examiner. Well, come to find out, he was here today to go in front of another, I think, hearings examiner for being out of compliance, and he closed his business down here
the first of the year. And a week after that, he got another citation. And there's a lien on his property. Mm-hmm. While we were working through this maneuver of $270,000. And he has moved his operation to Texas and can't even sell his house because we've got these lien of unclear violations that was going on. So what I'm coming back to, and that was just two. There's another third one off the top of my head today. Before, we need to address the policy that we have before we place a lien on some property.
It's code, so we need to change code because there's a process. It's not like they start with a lien, right? And it's painful, and Lord knows I've had, you know, we've all had people come in and be stuck with a lien, and we're like, why the heck do they have a lien on? It's set in code, so we'd have to address that.
Rusty Grape has a lien on
it. No, they're one of the ones that I've dealt with that has a lien. Yeah.
So that lien was placed on him when we had not landed with a code yet.
And we'll have to... No, the code... Well, so there's code provisions on that, so maybe we can get staff to get us the code and so you know what it says and the because there is a progressive number of steps where if you go through these steps and you haven't gotten to conclusion, then they're going to throw a lien on you. And that's in code, so we can get copies of it, though.
Like to review.
I haven't read in a while.
We'll review it and discuss it down the road.
Cool.
I was a little shocked today because he was here today to say, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about being in code. And we had this moving target of code that we did. And then... we are going to talk a little bit about...
Surface mining.
Surface mining. And we... are going to have more information. It's on schedule for consent on March 10th.
Public hearing.
For public hearing.
Oh, good. Okay.
And that's for the map and the policy.
I thought we were still working on that because we received a letter from the Department of Natural Resources, not happy with it, and I was hoping that we would work through it before we end up in court or fighting with everybody. And the other part was, I think the part that they were talking about, the DNR property, is part of Livingston Mountain. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
In large part, yeah.
So we were questioning whether or not we should go to a hearing before we try to address all the problems.
Yeah, if I could recall the work session, there were two issues. Policy and map. We were given the green light to schedule a hearing on that. But Commissioner Mielke, you were concerned about enforcement regulations, and the board agreed that we weren't ready for prime time on that piece.
I think we got the DNR letter
after that.
Yeah.
So should we delay the public hearing on the map and the policy and come to the board?
I don't want to bring it back to the board and see how everybody feels about this, or what do you think we should do?
Has the prosecuting attorney's office weighed in on the legalities?
They have the letter, and I visited with Oliver earlier in the week, and we were going to get together with you to talk about the DNR objections and whether or not that, you know, we believe that they're correct. Mm.
I would think before we take it to a hearing, we would have a very clear opinion feedback from the prosecuting attorney's office.
Before we schedule the hearing?
Maybe another work session?
Well,
what do we need?
I would say before we schedule anything, the prosecuting attorney's office can advise us as to the appropriate path forward. Let's hear what they have to say before we put so we don't rush it. This is a high volatility kind of a subject. We want to make sure that we really make sure we know what the law says.
We're caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, if we designate a mineral, surface mining mineral resource, then you have people with houses around it who don't like it. And if we don't put it on the map, the DNR doesn't like it. So,
thus the volatility.
Well, yeah, that's why we need to know what the law says.
Well, and they, our lawyers, it would be great to get their response to the DNR comments. I know that, I mean, our attorneys have been at our work sessions. They've been helping Planning Commission, and I remember specifically asking our attorney, you know, are we within the framework of the law in what we're doing here? And they said, yes, we are. We are within our rights. That was before we got kind of some specific targeted, this is where we think you're off target with the law, and it'd be good to find out from our attorneys, you know, what do you think? What do you think about that? Are we still on the right path or not with that? But I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with getting that, you know, having them give us that, get that information, give that information, then get us to hearing, you know, as to when it happens. I mean, I trust you guys.
Yeah, I was going to bring Chris.
Personally, I need more information.
Yeah, I was going to bring Chris and Oliver to one-on-ones on Monday,
yeah,
and walk you through their stance on the DNR objections.
And that's where I didn't know whether to have them in here at board time and talk about it, or do a one-on-one.
It's easier to just kind of, you know, pester them one-on-one to get specific answers on it. But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what, do you want to just come back? When is it scheduled for?
One-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
One-on-one.
Yeah. And then we can come back next week and figure out what...
Or you were going to find out how late we could do the notification.
Right.
Yeah, and that's my
question.
Rebecca
said we kind of had to go, like, today or tomorrow.
Okay. So in that case, we need to...
I think
not
she
put
said
it on.
March 4th.
Yeah, March 4th, and if, you know, if you look at where we are, 12th.
Yeah,
16.
And with the lead time and all of that.
Yeah. So I'll ask Rebecca to pull it, and then we'll have one-on-ones, and we'll decide on our readiness at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, come back next week and
that
have a conversation.
Okay, very good.
I'll feel better about it. I know, not going to be better, it would just feel better.
Fair enough.
I thought I had something else.
Oh.
I just kept throwing this up in my little book here.
Okay, the one-on-ones are on Tuesday. Excuse me, Monday's a holiday. So those are abbreviated one-on-ones, half hour apiece. So.
When's the holiday?
Pardon me? President's Day.
What day is that?
Monday.
This coming Monday?
This coming Monday.
Oh my goodness.
You're not going to Bend? You didn't plan a trip? Anna.
Excuse me?
Wait, what?
I know I'm going.
She doesn't know it's a holiday on Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
I neglected to put that in my newsletter today, so maybe you and I can do an all county message.
Oh, about Monday?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. McCauley, I'm done.
Okay.
You have some stuff.
Just two things. Last week, when we were talking about the Center for Community Health shooting, the board learned that we had a workplace violence policy that prohibited concealed carry by county employees. And so I've made a copy of the relevant portion of that policy. I got to get this down here.
I don't even worry about it. You're fine. We can just do it to mess with you.
So... based on your interest, feel free to read that, and then at a subsequent time we'll discuss it and decide whether or not we need to modify the policy.
Are you well? And that's just one of the suggestions we got. Do we have a list of the suggestions that you guys got from when you went over there?
Bill Springmeier and Laura Danos, they conducted a formal review. I haven't seen the collected comments yet, but I got to get a call into Bill and say, give me what you got.
So I would kind of like to see all of them and then see where they come with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some are not going to be possible.
No, some will be possible, and we'll need to spend some money to accomplish the ones we believe make sense and are possible within reason. But we did hear from the employees, you know, you got to spend some money to fix this stuff. And we were like, okay. And the last thing is I handed out two vacancy requests. It's 4:30. We've been here 2 hours doing this, so I would recommend that you chew on these.
Chew on these,
and then we'll talk about them next week.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That sounds good.
Okay, and with that, I'm done. So, subject to the board chair adjourning us.
Did I hear a motion?
So moved.
We're adjourned.
Okay, thank you.
I was surprised to see that Janelle Tomlin.
She
must be moved to another.
You and David. Important. Something important.
What's that?
I need 5 minutes with the two of you.
Okay.
Oh no. Okay, so.
Okay. So you're surprised that they left or what?
What? I think she's
leaving.
She's leaving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe she'll move to a different position, like get an internal transfer or something like that.
Or else we can just.
Hey.